That would actually be all right. That's we're getting off track, but that'd be funny to like just Bored Strahd is like showing up as different shit that you wouldn't think. He's like wandering around spooky Barovia, very serious campaign, and then T-Rex out of the woods.
But the T-Rex only has like the vampire. And
Strahd's like, oh, well done, I gotta go. Yeah. What?
Welcome to Monsters and Malta Class, your Dungeons and Dragons fix. I'm Ellie Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigle.
And I'm Will Melton.
And on this episode, we are taking a look at how to best use a recurring villain, a big, bad, evil guy, a final boss that has a presence throughout your campaign, and very possibly even recurring fights, and how to not make that boring and how to make it really cool. Specifically, we're using Strahd von Zarovich as the example of this, because he does an amazing job of that in the Curse of Strahd adventure book. So it's kind of like our monster episodes covering the stat block and all about him, but, you know, taking design ideas from it and talking about that further. In case that's not super obvious, this is going to have spoilers for the Curse of Strahd adventure. So if that's a problem to you, don't listen. And if I DM for you, that's a problem for you. Don't listen. There's ideas coming. So yeah, sorry. I don't know if any of you listen, and I'm talking to no one right now. But if you heard me say that, remind me next session, you get inspiration just for listening.
Ooh, wow.
None of them listen. It's not going to happen.
I should use that to see if Will remembers that he's part of this podcast. So let's start by talking about Strahd a little bit. If you're not familiar, Strahd is the vampire in Dungeons and Dragons. His history goes well before 5th edition, all the way back to 1st edition in the adventure Ravenloft. The story is always the same, though. Strahd was a prince who went through a midlife crisis and made a pact with the Shadowfell, killing his brother in the process so that he could take his brother's wife as his own. She was super not cool with that, and in his efforts to force her to love him, she flung herself off a cliff. Strahd tried to kill himself in this grief, but in a twist of fate, he remained alive and undead, now rising as a vampire and enshrouding all of Barovia in a domain that was simultaneously trapped by him and trapping him. So Strahd is a very potent spellcaster, as well as quite a force in martial range. I guess we can start by kind of going through the stat block, or do we want to talk about just what a recurring villain is first?
Let's start with that. Quick, interesting note though, is that's actually not, like, in Curse of Strahd, that is not his story.
How does it change?
I know that's like the older one. He didn't kill himself. He was, after killing his brother, but Sergi? Sergei? How do you say it? Sure.
That sounds about right. Sergei.
Okay. I'm so bad at pronunciation of things. Sorry, any of this.
It's not what we're here for.
Right. Guards turned on him and tried to kill him, and then he wouldn't die. That is a surprise to him as well, because the Dark Pact turned him into it. Also, the Dark Pact was not formed to steal Tatiana. It was to become immortal because he feared death.
So they did change it from the beginning of time to fifth, the beginning of time, the 80s to fifth edition.
But yeah, just in terms of, you know, the big bad evil guy with a big presence, who's not just some like mysterious person behind the curtains that you finally reveal at the end and have a boss fight. Strahd is an amazing, amazing example of that. And the Curse of Strahd adventure does a great job of kind of making that happen as well. And he is really interwoven in the adventure. But I still think the principles can be taken out and used for anything. But I know specifically with Strahd, it's like he is Barovia and Barovia is him. So while you are there, his presence is all around. Everyone fears him. Everybody talks about him. He's always a threat. He likes to show up and toy with the party to test who's stronger, who might be worthy to turn into a vampire spawn, who might someone he wants to seduce for a time. And yeah, there's a lot to it.
So when I was thinking about this, one thing that came to my mind is the idea of like almost a lair within a lair, because spoiler, Strahd has a lair with lair actions, just like a lot of other bosses. But Barovia becomes sort of Strahd's gigantic lair. He doesn't have absolute power, but it's like an arena he controls. And that's a great idea for campaigns if you really want
his region.
If you want to like centralize it. And the cool thing about Barovia is you're trapped there until you beat Strahd. So that's why it's kind of a little different than a region, because you got a little bit more power than the normal ruler. But I really like that concept.
Right.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, keeping the villain interesting, I mean, I'd say the recurring villain is a trope that everybody's pretty familiar with, even outside of Strahd. I mean, it's been used in every Saturday morning cartoon you've probably ever seen, as the hero and villain are constantly at odds. While the hero may always win in a Saturday morning cartoon compared to D&D, the concept of the villain always coming back is basically the same. I mean, you've got Strahd is basically Team Rocket, Skeletor, or Megatron. I mean, it's all the same. And, you know, as a child, we don't really tire of that struggle, but it's because there's like, there's always that kind of belief there's a chance that maybe this time the villain will win. I feel like when we play D&D, it's not always as cheesy or neat and tidy as a Saturday morning cartoon. But I still really love that feeling of the recurring villain. Now, when we were just talking about Strahd, you're talking about how, yes, he kind of controls this entire region of Barovia, and he has, we'll say, near total control. It's by no means total control, but it gives him a lot of ways to just escape when necessary, and you don't really have to do more than just kind of hand wave it. I think that's something we'll probably end up talking about later as well, but I don't know. There's just so many ways to try and keep that villain interesting, because it's so easy to keep a lot of the intrigue when the villain sits in a high tower and they kind of work on plans behind closed doors. But when the villain's showing up every few sessions and fighting the party or gloating, you know, there's still that question of like, how do we keep tension high and really keep the tension there when we've kind of seen everything that's on the table?
And I think that's key. You don't let them see everything that's on the table. Where this does differ from like the Saturday morning cartoons, the Team Rockets and all that.
I hope so.
Those villains are always, as you said, defeated at the end of the episode, because it's kids' cartoon and the good guys are the good guys. They just kind of let them go to go off and lick the ruins, and then they come back to try again. Strahd is a like an existential threat to your party.
Yes.
Until much, 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 much later in the campaign. And very possibly always, because like with how the campaign's laid out, like they could, in theory, just storm right to his castle and just die immediately, and that's the end of it.
I don't even think it would, based on how Strahd would act. I mean, if the party had that arrogance to just storm right up and try and attack Strahd at like second or third level, that would be hilarious.
Right. So yeah, Strahd showing up is not to be foiled by the party again and again. It's to intimidate them and always keep Strahd in the back of the party's mind, because he shows up to toy with them. He doesn't want to kill them. Like, he's an immortal vampire stuck in this terrible realm. Like, he gets bored.
Right. This is purely entertainment. Humanity.
Yeah. So he's going to show up and just show just a little bit of his power. Maybe every single time, like he has a huge stat block, which we'll go through. He does like just another action or showcases another thing he could do. Just one thing.
To me, that really, the thing that separates this recurring villain idea aside from, say, any other trope you want to play out is the arrogance. I mean, there is such a level of arrogance that comes from somebody who is going to show up, kind of bat the players around like they're some cat toys, and then just take off when they're bored. That is like a high level of like, you just don't even view them as a threat. You view them as entertainment purely.
And even if he severely miscalculates for somebody, and like he shows up when they first get into Barovia and the party's like destroys him. He doesn't even die. He just turns to mist and goes back to his coffin and comes back in like 20. It's in the stat block, but.
So let's talk about that stat block to give a bit of a backdrop here. So Strahd is considered a challenge rating 15, has a armor class of 16, HP of 144, speed of 30 feet. And then stats are pretty good. We've got 18 strength, 18 dex, 18 con, 20 intelligence, 15 wisdom, and 18 charisma.
Yeah, just all right.
Just all right. Yeah, saving throws in dex, wisdom, and charisma, giving +9, +7, and +9, and then some wild skills of 15 arcana, 12 perception, 10 religion, and 14 stealth.
And this is definitely a stat block where I think the skills are needed. A lot of times we talk about like, oh, why does this thing have like a history skill? I can't even speak. This is one where it can make a lot of sense to have Strahd roll various skill checks throughout to see how things turn out.
Yeah.
Because like there's a lot of non-combat interactions with him.
Right, like rolling a religion check to see if he's familiar with the cleric's deity and how much he knows, and using that information to try and entice the cleric, things like that.
Right.
Damage resistances, we have necrotic, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks. Kind of straightforward. I guess I'd expect an immunity to necrotic, but
yes,
not a huge deal. Dark vision out to 120 feet, passive perception of 22, and speaks abyssal, common, draconic, elvish, giant, and infernal.
Just an interesting mix. I'm assuming there's some deep lore reason for that in the decades of that Strahd has existed.
So. Yeah, it feels a lot like when I have to choose languages for a D&D character. And I'm like, oh my god, I have six? Well, what's gonna come up?
yeah.
Like, okay, I guess I'll take Draconic. And somebody asked me like 6 months later, like, why does your character know Draconic? It's like, I do. I just do.
I found a really neat book when I was a kid and translated it.
Oh, man, the ability to learn languages like this. It's the most upsetting thing to my verisimilitude in D&D is how many languages people just have.
I mean, if you leave America, it's very common for people to at least be bilingual. Trilingual is still pretty common too.
No, I don't.
We're kind of on a language island here.
I hate it. Anyways, so first thing that Strahd has for passive abilities, we have Shape Changer. So I'm actually going to jump around a little bit here because it talks about something that otherwise has zero context. It says, if Strahd isn't in running water or sunlight, he can use his action to polymorph into a tiny bat, medium wolf, or a medium cloud of mist, or back to his true form. So let's keep that, put a pin in the shape changer, and let's talk about that running water or sunlight thing. So vampires have these inherent weaknesses that I think a lot of them are pretty commonplace known in just the history of vampires. Whether or not your party knows this in world, that's kind of up for you to decide, but this is really a true unique instance where weaknesses are just put into the stat block. So Strahd has the following flaws. We have forbiddance, can't enter a residence without an invitation from one of the occupants, harmed by running water, so he takes 20 acid damage if he ends his turn in running water, stake to the heart, if a piercing weapon made of wood is driven into his heart while he is incapacitated in his coffin, he is paralyzed until the stake is removed, and then sunlight, hypersensitivity. While in sunlight, Strahd takes 20 radiant damage at the start of his turn and has disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks. And so a couple of these abilities that we see later on aren't possible to be used when these weaknesses are used against Strahd. So obviously that's something that the party needs to figure out and find ways to utilize that throughout the campaign or whatever you're using Strahd for in this case. And I don't know, I love that those are just like baked into the stat block.
Yeah, I definitely like the weaknesses, very much taken from just vampire mythology or very reminiscent of it. And Strahd needs that stuff. It's just enough to give your party a sense of a little bit of control and being able to do some creative things to be able to continue to get away from him and keep not the upper hand, but him at least at bay, especially the forbiddance where candidates or residents found an invitation. Sunlight hypersensitivity definitely doesn't come up unless the party prepares it, because Barovia is shrouded in like eternal cloudy days. It's always overcast.
Yeah, a couple of ways you can probably work that out, but it's things to keep in mind is that in the event that any of these do come up, mainly the sunlight and the running water aspect, it's not like Strahd's just going to sit there and take it. Those are usually, you know, encounter enders where Strahd's like, all right, you know, you've got the upper hand. I'm out. That's right. Not the game we're playing here.
Right.
Go ahead.
But yeah, to the sunlight, there is the magic, like there's an artifact within Curse of Strahd you have to hunt down and get. There's three of them. One of them, like, it's basically like a sun sword with a name, which will definitely utilize sunlight hypersensitivity. There's also sunlight spells and I think a couple other ways. I think cleric subclasses could play off of that.
Yeah, and there's like control weather. I don't know how that would work in Barovia if you can make it sunny with control weather spells, but that's probably somewhere talked about in the book. I don't know.
It's also an 8th level spell.
That was going to be my follow-up. It's also pretty far away.
Yeah, this campaign ends at 10, so.
So they want you to think. You can have it end at 20 if you want. So sure. Looking at the shape changer ability, though, back to this, is Strahd is able to turn into a bat, a wolf, or a cloud of mist. While in bat or wolf form, Strahd can't speak. In bat forms, walking speed's 5, flying speed's 30, and wolf form, the walking speed's 40. And otherwise, the statistics, other than the size, are unchanged. So even as a bat, Strahd has a +9 to dexterity saving throws and 18 strength and all of that. Anything he's wearing transforms with him, but nothing he's carrying does, and he reverts to his true form if he dies. Talking about that, though, I mean, that just usually the downside of polymorphing or shape changing in combat or for whatever reason is that your stats are basically garbage. But in this case, you retain the AC, the HP, as far as I can tell.
Sure. I don't think he would use these for combat, though. Okay, he can't speak in them, and that's like he's gonna want to taunt the party and mess with them and try and drive wedges during combat. I think the shape changer forms play really, really well into the ever-present nature of Strahd. Barovia is full of bats and wolves, and at any point Strahd could be one of them, and you don't know. It's always just a threat. Especially bats. I know
that's fair.
Somewhere, it's like in the introduction, somewhere in the first chapter, it talks about how there, as the sun sets, thousands of bats stream out of a cave, and sometimes Strahd likes to join them. And so anytime that happens, it's like, uh-oh, are we being watched? Strahd right there. You get attacked by a pack of wolves when you're level 8, which is not a fear at all. One of them might be Strahd. It's just always a threat. Always there. Makes them really easy to get the upper hand, to sneak up, to ambush, to get around unseen.
Yeah, so bringing that to the larger conversation, it gives that idea of for a reoccurring villain here, the ability to shape change is invaluable. Being able to show up in different ways without the party knowing at that time is extremely, extremely useful. I used it to a pretty good effect, actually, in Waterdeep Dragon Heist with the villain Jarlaxle, I forget what his name is, but he had the ability to shape change and did that multiple times throughout the campaign and had it like as a reveal at the end, showing like the 6 or 7 different NPCs that he was playing that were closely tied to the players and made them realize like, oh, he was actually all of them or he was only some of them and just kind of changed throughout it. So shape changing as a villain is a huge, huge boon. And in this case, we're seeing a wolf or a bat. I mean, if the party gets attacked by wolves, maybe one of them runs off and the party doesn't even think about it until later they see Strahd turn into a wolf and maybe they put those pieces together and things like that can be really fun.
Or maybe the wolf beats their ass.
Yeah, there's that too. I will say that you mentioned like he probably wouldn't turn into these during a combat. I could see turning into a bat mid-combat just for the moving to a new location, the ability to fly and like change up the area and where the fight is occurring. That one could be worthwhile, actually. Because gaining a fly speed, I know it's obviously a big cost as a whole action, but
yeah,
there's other things he can do. It depends
where he's at. Like if out in Barovia, in his castle, that's not necessary. So he could just kind of freely move through his castle.
That's
true.
Which
we'll get to, but
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So rounding out this, there is talk of the mist form, which if he hits 0 points, he turns into mist. So while in mist forward, Strahd can't take action, speak, or manipulate objects. He's weightless, has a flying speed of 20, can hover, can enter in a hostile creature space and stop there. In addition, if air can move through somewhere, then the mist can squeeze through there. He cannot pass through water, and he has advantage on strength, dex, and con saving throws, and is immune to all non-magical damage except the damage he takes from sunlight. So Mistform is a very easy escape plan for Strahd.
Yeah. Yeah, you said if he dies, he could also just change into this an action. Yep, again, just another ever-present thing. It's a foggy night. Like, uh-oh.
Is Strahd the fart cloud? You never know.
Right?
I'm going to let you take over for a second here, Ellie. I'm going to popcorn the stat block.
Sure. All right. Legendary resistance is 3-day. Fails to save and throw. Could choose to succeed instead. Nothing spectacular. For Strahd, though, I would want to see more just because he's such a huge, iconic villain. But whatever. At this point in time, when this book came out, 3-day legendary resistance is what they did, and it's what he's got.
He's also got really good saving throws and all the ones that matter. +9 charisma, wisdom, and dex.
Right. That's a fair point. All right, Misty Escape. When he drops 0 hit points outside his coffin, transforms into a cloud of mist, as we just talked about, instead of falling unconscious. Provided that he isn't in running water or sunlight. If he can't transform, he is destroyed. Put a pin in that, because he is very hard to actually destroy. While he has 0 hit points in mist form, he can't revert to his vampire form, and he must reach his coffin within 2 hours or be destroyed. Once in his coffin, he reverts to his vampire form. He is then paralyzed until he regains at least 1 hit point. After 1 hour in his coffin of 0 hit points, he regains 1 hit point. So basically really, really hard to kill. You have to really set it up. And I would think this information would be hidden from the players until much later on in the campaign.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they'd even the first time if they did drop Strahd to 0 HP, I don't think they'd even recognize what's happening beyond that he turns into mist and disappears.
And also, I don't think it's going to happen until they are like setting off to the castle with their artifacts determined to do so. It's just so easy for him to escape. And he's also just so much stronger. Like I said, you're expected in this campaign to fight him at level 10 and he's challenge rating 15. It's just, yeah. I don't think you're ever going to, I don't want to say like for certain, but I would be really surprised to find out a DM would have to deal with a party, like a non-homebrewed level appropriate to this campaign party, like accidentally killing Strahd before the DM intended it.
Like permanently killing?
Or no, just even like reducing him to 0 hit points.
I could see reducing to 0. I mean, I know regain.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's, you're inviting a lot of people in the comment section to describe.
That was going to get like the next thing.
Five party.
If that happened, let me know. I want to know the situation.
Yeah, because with 144 HP,
I can think of like 12.
And the fact that his regeneration, which we haven't talked about yet, gets cut off if he takes radiant damage, I could see a story of my five paladin party brought to Curse of Strahd that the DM some reason approved. One shot Strahd at 4th level, actually.
Right. Great. I still want to hear about it. That'd be cool.
Yes, please, please.
But yeah, outside of like ridiculous situations like that, either specifically engineered to do this or ignoring rules or using crazy homebrew rule, I think
we get to 7th level.
I'm just like laughing my ass off thinking about that situation where your dickhead party all comes with these like min-max to hell paladins and just nuke Strahd out of the gate at level 5, like one round, it just destroyed. And then you have to redo the entire campaign where it's him like fortifying his castle to keep.
Stay away. Stay away.
I'll open the fog, please.
No, I still think in that situation, I mean, Strahd has allies that he'd be sending instead. There's mm-hmm. more to it. And just because you're doing radiant damage and doing a lot of it is not the end all be all. He can just, I mean, because what's the easiest way to counter a paladin? Be what, 15 feet in the air? So yes. He's not building up his castle to keep them out. He's just building little like 10 foot tall towers that he can fly up to the top of and the paladins can't climb. It's not the end of the world for him. He would underestimate them one time. And that would be the last time.
Yes. Also, he's not vulnerable to radiant damage. So it's not like it's doing extra.
It's just taking away his 20 HP regen.
I was going to say, yes, yeah, so the next thing is regeneration. He regains 20 HP at the start of his turn if he has at least one hit point and isn't in running water or sunlight. If he takes radiant damage or damage from holy water, this trait doesn't function at the start of his next turn. So just like, yeah, if he gets smitten, whatever.
Smitten. Yeah, smitten. If Strahd is smitten.
Right. He won't regenerate that turn, but he'll start to. And like a low level party, level 5, I think it'll be hard for him to do 144 damage worth when it's not a vulnerability.
Right. At level 7, though, that's where I said, I'm like, I can see
why. What happens at 7?
It's just you all are putting up numbers close to that.
Okay.
If you're all focusing damage right now at level 7, you can put 100 damage down. I won't say easy, but not like, it's not unheard of by any means. And it's something that I constantly have to dance around when creating enemies. So it's not that it's going to be easy. It's not that it's going to happen every time. It just starts to be a possibility in my eyes.
Sure. And even for those crazy situations, it's like all paladins. It's, we're getting kind of really,
situation,
yeah, we're getting kind of really knocked off the path here of like the coolness of a recurring villain and just talking in the nitty gritty details. But
us,
it's you would also need him to like roll really low in initiative and them to all roll before him, and he is just standing there and not taking his legendary actions.
And even then, it still just doesn't matter. You get the upper hand on him one time, it's not the end of the world. It's the end of that fight.
Right. All right, but moving on to the spell. Stat block is spell casting next. He's a 9th level spellcaster. This spell casts melee is intelligent, so DC of 18 and plus 10 hits. So this has him up to 5th level spell slots. Ray of Frost is best I can tell. I think it's only ranged attack.
No, actually, Blight is ranged.
Oh, that is. 30 okay.
Foot range.
And Fireball is
Fireball's ranged. Pretty ranged as well.
Sure, okay. I missed
animate
that.
Objects is arguably ranged.
You could argue that.
Yeah. Okay, all spells, though, which take its entire action. This was before the Monsters of the Multiverse rework of spells as part of multi-attack, which, if Strahd ever gets reworked in that new style, I think Lennon would be able to cast spells as part of a multi-attack. It is a must for him. I would almost even say just do that change anyways.
Yeah, I would definitely say that as well.
Yeah. But yeah, Mage Hand, Prestidigitation, Ray of Frost. Wonder ones that might come up. Fog Cloud, Sleep at lower levels.
So I would even say, I mean, before we go through and read every single one, Sleep at lower levels would be hilarious, though.
Yes.
The party thinks that they're going to win and he just sleeps all of them. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Out. Definitely can.
But this is one of the few times that all of these spells that might not have a combat use or might not have a every combat use do start to become important, because sure, usually, you know, he's not going to use Gust of Wind, but when you're having a fight over and over again, you get to use those and admit that they're not the optimal move, and that's okay, because we're gonna just make the fight different this time. You know, how would it be different if we tried to structure a Strahd fight around the Gust of Wind spell? And does it sound silly? Yeah, for the most part, but Strahd's messing with them. He's just gonna Gust of Wind and just keep pushing them back, and that's the challenge this time. Is that really great for the final fight? No, he's gonna use Fireball at 5th level and Blight's out the butt, but in this one fight, yeah, he's going to Gust of Wind them and then do a fog cloud and disappear in his little mist.
Right. Mirror Image is another good one to just kind of change up the fight. I mean, it's a good spell anyways, but...
Yeah, that's a final fight one. That one's too good to not break out in the climax.
Right. Some of these you need to be careful with, like dropping a fireball. Like the first time you meet him at level 3 is... I mean, it's going to kill the party.
That's the prologue. You start off as a group of adventurers going to Barovia. And you tell your players to bring 2 characters, and they're like, not sure why. And then you blow every single one of them up. Like, first 20 minutes of the campaign with Strahd.
They don't even make it out of Death House.
All right, pull out your next set of characters.
And it just has a short little cutscene of Strahd going, might have started a little too high on that one. Exactly. We'll pull back next time.
Right. The Detect Thoughts is great for that kind of recurring scary villain presence as he's toying with you and interacting, trying to peer into your thoughts and get your secrets. And
and use them against you. Big thing is driving wedges between the party and anything that, and maybe this is something that you tell the players beforehand, like, hey, I want you to, you know, come up with some negative things about the other players, or not the other players, sorry, the other characters. Tell me everything you hate about the person to your left. But, you know, come up with some negative thoughts that later points you might use against them, or using it again just to bring in those role playing moments. It makes them hate Strahd even more, and it leads to good role playing as well.
Right. Like Polymorph just extends the shape changer even more. And then Scrying, just knowing.
Giant ape,
yep.
Has Strahd ever seen a giant ape?
Probably.
Doesn't matter. Okay. He's got plenty of time. He can just Google stuff. It's like, what's the best thing to polymorph into? Oh, giant apes.
A lot of discourse between giant ape versus T-Rex. Okay. All right.
That would actually be, all right, we're getting off track, but that'd be funny to like just board Strahd is like showing up as different shit that you wouldn't think. He's like wandering around spooky Barovia, very serious campaign, and then T-Rex out of the woods.
But the T-Rex only has like the vampire.
Strahd's like, oh, well done, I gotta go. Yeah. What? He's just like test driving different animals he looked up in books.
Right, that's really great.
Oh man,
back on the serious side of things, him having Scrying as well, yeah. Just let it slip early on that he has Scrying, and that's just like an ever present scary thing for the party,
right? I mean, if you want to make it a mechanic, you can do some like once a day I'm gonna roll and see if Strahd decides to scry on them, but really I would forget to do that after like the first session. I would just occasionally just say that yes, he did scry on them, or if a situation comes up and you're like, was Strahd able to scry on them in this moment, like that happened a week ago, then just when that comes up, have the player make the wisdom saving throw and decide at that point if the scry was successful a week ago,
right?
Just for ease of game.
Yeah, I like that, and he's smart enough to justify that kind of retroactive, you know, you're kind of cheating it as the DM to catch up to the 20 intellect immortal vampire. Yeah.
I'm going to have to cheat a lot more to catch up to that because I put myself around a 7 or 8. So we're going to be fudging dice. We're going to be retroactively doing a bunch. It's going to take a lot to get to a 20.
Right. All right. And then Spider Climb. They could climb difficult surfaces, including upside down and ceilings, without having to make an ability check.
And, oh, I'm sorry. Even just one last thing on the spells. Greater invisibility, kind of an obvious one, but worth bringing up. He can literally just be in the corner. Like, who needs the scrying? He's just there, and the party didn't notice. He's got plus 10, plus 14 to stealth. Invisibility gives him advantage on it, so they're not just detecting that.
Right. All right, and then there's the weaknesses, which we already talked about. Moving on to actions, multi-attack. So this is vampire form only. Strahd makes 2 attacks, one of which can be a bite attack. So it's kind of up to you about which one's an attack. Because you have unarmed strike, bite, charm, and children of the night. Like, I guess unarmed strike and bite are the only attacks there, right?
This is not phrased in a way that it's usually phrased.
Yeah, that's what I was...
You're right. Based on how this is worded, it looks like everything on here is an attack, but normally it says Strahd makes 2 attacks, either an unarmed strike or a bite, or 2 unarmed strikes and a bite, like something like that. But this doesn't get into those details. Honestly, not that I think this rules as intended. I would probably allow you to swap out any of these in the same reason that we talked about being able to swap out one of the attacks for a spell.
It
just feels more natural and is overall a one of the few things I've liked about the Monsters of the Multiverse changes.
Yep, I agree. All right, so the unarmed strike is melee weapon attack, plus 9 hit, reach of 5 feet. Target takes 1d8 plus 4 slashing damage, plus 4d6 necrotic. If the target is a creature, Strahd could grapple it with an escape DC of 18 instead of dealing the slashing damage. So the necrotic happens no matter what. which is nice. Then bite, plus 9 to hit, reach of 5 feet. One willing creature or a creature that is grappled by Strahd. So that's where Donna Strike plays really well into it. Incapacitated or restrained. So, sorry, my cadence there was weird. So if, yeah, you do it on one willing creature that is grappled by Strahd, incapacitated, or restrained. It does 1d6 plus 4 piercing damage plus 3d6 necrotic damage. The target's hit point maximum is reduced by an amount equal to the necrotic damage taken, and Strahd regains the hit points of equal to the damage. The reduction lasts until the target finishes a long rest. The target dies if its hit point maximum is reduced to 0. A humanoid slain in this way and then buried in the ground rises the following night as a vampire spawn under Strahd's control. So that's the vampire drinking the blood. Sucking their blood type thing. The damage is definitely not that crazy for any of them.
No, it's really not anything too special.
But he's more of a spellcaster.
Yeah, I guess I'd just say that this is consistent damage. And, you know, if we're talking about, I guess it's what, 22 from the unarmed strike and then 17 from the bite, so either 44 damage per round isn't too bad if we're doing two unarmed strikes. The bite, I guess,
that's true. Yeah, because I guess you get all that extra necrotic damage. It does add up. Okay.
Yeah, the bite, I guess it's a little bit, I don't know if awkward's the right word for it, but it does feel hard to justify, because like we talked with the Ashen Rider, reducing somebody's max HP to 0 just doesn't really happen too much unless you're doing a lot of this. I don't know how much it's going to scare the party either. It could be more worthwhile because if you do that, we'll say before the final encounter, or if you're fighting Strahd twice in a day, then that hit point max being reduced can be a big deal.
Also, it's vampire spawn don't do that.
Vampire spawn reduce it too. Okay, so you've got multiple ways to reduce somebody down. So, no, the damage itself isn't oppressive, but it's consistent. So I think it doesn't need to be too oppressive.
Yeah, and again, I guess it separating out the necrotic and the slashing makes it seem really low, but it's not. For how low of a level of a campaign it is, it's definitely not bad.
Yeah, this is one-shotting, like, anybody under fourth level. So yeah,
that's true.
That's something important to keep in mind.
Right. All right. Also, his charm, Strahd targets one humanoid he can see within 30 feet of him. If the target can see Strahd, they must succeed on a DC 17 wisdom saving throw or be charmed. The charm target regards Strahd as a trusted friend to be heeded and protected. The target isn't under Strahd's control, but it takes his request and actions in the most favorable way and lets Strahd bite him. Each time Strahd or his companions do anything harmful to the target, it can repeat the saving throw, ending the effects on itself on a success. Otherwise, it lasts for 24 hours or until Strahd is destroyed, is on a different plane of existence than the target, or takes a bonus action to end the effect. Very classic vampire stuff. It's a cool charm ability. Definitely use it against the party all the time. Get them to try and break it.
I don't know about all the time, but sometimes. I would say that gets old a little bit. if we're talking about like from a recurring standpoint, I wouldn't start like every single encounter with a charm or go through every single round trying to charm absolutely everyone.
That's fair.
It's a specific vibe to go for. And maybe even something that's, I don't want to say better used out of combat, but is nice to use out of combat, because if you're just talking with Strahd, you know, he's shooting the shit with you and talking down to you as he does, and then he does this charm before the fight's even started. That to me is a tone setter, to say the least.
Right. Yeah, and it's not a spell, so I would read this as it's not obvious it's happening.
Yeah.
And then you could definitely use it to kind of sow discourse in the party.
Yeah, the first time it happens, especially because they don't have any idea that the person's charmed.
Exactly. Yeah, and give them commands. It'll last for 24 hours. And then if Strahd leaves, it's not ending because he's not hurting them. Have them start doing stuff to undermine the party.
Yeah, just to give a specific example.
So discord, not discourse, but I misspoke there. I was like, after I said that, I was like, that doesn't sound right. That's Discord. So Discord. Okay.
So to give a specific example, if Strahd were to give the party an ultimatum or just some type of offer, and everyone's like the heroic, like, no, we're not saying yes to that. Go away, Strahd. And he charms one person who maybe goes to the other side of things and is like, hey, I'm terrified. Let's just take the deal. Let's get out of here or whatever. You know, if the other players either roleplay that well or don't know that that person is charmed, then again, just leads to a really, really great roleplay moments.
Okay. And then Children of the Night, one a day, he magically calls 2d4 swarms of bats or rats, provided the sun isn't up. While outdoors, Strahd could call 3d6 wolves instead. The called creature rides in 1d4 rounds, acting as allies of Strahd and obeying his spoken commands. They remain for 1 hour until Strahd dies or he dismisses them as a bonus action. So it's just a way to get allies. The arrive in 1d4 rounds, I don't like, because that, I mean, 4 rounds could be a really long time.
Yeah. It'd be kind of hilarious if Strahd is killed in that time or leaves in that time. And then the party's like, wow, that was a tough fight. And then just 3d6 wolves show up.
There's 18 wolves. Yeah. Which is a lot of wolves.
It's a lot of wolves.
Like that's a problem.
Like if I just going about my day, if I saw one wolf, I'd be pretty terrified. But seeing 18 wolves is, I'm not even calling animal control there. I'm calling the government. Right. Just straight to the top. There's 18 wolves. They're acting together. This is dangerous. Somebody, the Pentagon, they deal with that stuff, right?
Right.
Liam.
Liam, there's 18 wolves outside my house. I'll be right over, bud. Deal with this all the time. Just another day. All right. But otherwise, yes, it is a long, long time. Something that might be better served doing before combat or even just as part of the, say that his I'm leaving you with this, you know, so he fights you for 2 rounds and a swarm of rats show up and it's just like, you know what? You're not even worth my time. My rats are going to finish this off. Obviously, they're not going to. It's a swarm of rats, but the concept is there.
It could be 8 swarms of rats.
Okay, that is a lot of rats. Yeah. Liam!
That's an absurd amount of rats.
Does he deal with those two?
Not just wolves.
Oh, crap.
I can't think of a movie where Liam Neeson fought rats. So
yeah, I say there's The Gray. I don't think the rats exists.
The Gray, but for some reason it's people stranded in rat territory.
The sewers in New York.
How did a plane crash down there?
But also it's the ability, it's a good way to get allies and minions into the fight, and also like the wave thing of showing up. Maybe don't roll the rounds, just kind of do it when it's convenient.
Also, I will just end it with this. What a horrible amount of bookkeeping for the DM. If 12 wolves show up, honestly, that's just an annoying amount of wolves to run.
Yeah, in the campaign I DM, it's a pre-written one, and there was an area where it was 12 zombies. And I started it out with just kind of like, okay, there's 12 zombies, and I rolled initiative in 2 sections. But yeah, I'm trying to do the minis on the map and half the minis are the same. And it's like, oh my God.
It's pretty bad.
Really bad. Yeah.
Do y'all remember back when I tried to alleviate that problem by making little like squares that I'd put underneath? So there was like monster 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like I'd number them individually and like be managing my initiative tracker on paper and everything. And I finally just gave up and was like, no more fights with more than 6 monsters. It's silly. If you can't balance the encounter around that, then you've got other problems.
All right, that's when you start grouping them.
Yeah,
one good way to handle it.
I'd make a swarm of zombies stat block, and there'd be 3 swarms of zombies.
Right. Okay, and then legendary actions. These work the same as all others. Can be done after another player's turn. He has 3 legendary actions. They get him, gets him back on the start of his turn. He can move, moves up to the speed of five without provoking opportunity attacks. That last line's important. Unarmed strike, makes 1 unarmed strike. Or for 2 actions, can bite, makes 1 bite attack. I find these really dull. I wish these were more interesting and flavorful.
Steal some Mummy Lord ones.
Right. Like, I mean, yeah.
Let Strahd's him turn like, into definitely. A... Instead of the moving with that up to his speed without provoking opportunity attacks, he turns into bats. He turns into bats and reappears up to his movement speed away.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess that's kind of on the DM to just make it flavorful. And here's like the court, the skeleton.
Love when it's on the DM.
Right.
It's great. That's why I buy books.
Being able to do additional unarmed strikes or bites could definitely up his damage quite a bit. So.
Yeah, but nothing exciting about that, though.
Right. Okay. And then layer actions, which are a pretty big deal for him. So. This is Castle Ravenloft, is his lair. It happens on initial count 20. He doesn't need to alternate between them. He can do the same one every turn if he wants, which is different and pretty cool, I think. There's four of these. So on the first one, until initial count 20 on the next round, he can pass through solid walls, doors, ceilings, and floors as if they weren't there. So you know how earlier I said he doesn't really need that, like to transform into a bat to get around and stuff. In his castle, he could just...
So you're not
move
wrong,
about freely,
but it doesn't say that he gets a fly speed as well. Like, does gravity still apply to him?
I'm gonna go with no.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I would run it that way too, but it doesn't say that.
I mean, he can climb.
He does have spider climb.
That's true.
Yeah, so I mean, he'd play it like that. But I'm picturing more like Ocarina of Time, Ganondorf fight, him just kind of floating around in his gothic castle.
I haven't finished that yet, so please preface things like that with spoiler alert. I'm still in the water temple.
I feel like I've talked to you all about this, but I've never actually beaten Ocarina of Time because I didn't have it as a child, and then I tried playing an emulator, and it crashed on me when getting the horse out of the enclosure. And then I was like, well, I tried and never ended up beating it. So
Epona.
Yeah. Yep. So I actually didn't get that, but it was a good spoiler.
All right. Anyways, next one, Strahd targets any number of doors and windows that he could see, causing each one to either open or close as he wishes. Closed doors can be magically locked, needing a successful DC 20 strength check to force open until Strahd chooses to end the effect or until Strahd uses the layer action again. This is more thematic, though it could be, if you set up a battle mat creatively, could be used to definitely split up the party.
Easily. I would argue easily done. Especially, the best way to do this is bait your strongest character through a door.
Right.
With the right timing, it shouldn't be that difficult.
It's the timing that gets tricky. Having it happen on initial count 20.
Yeah, I think it doesn't totally matter, right? As long as you split them up in some capacity, it doesn't matter if your strongest is on one side or the other. I mean,
right.
Either side that they're on, they can try and break it down. But still, it causes panic, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, with the kind of inbuilt grapple mechanics, you could very easily move people.
True.
And I think we've talked about this before, but with these encounters, as much as it might pain some DMs, rolling a one on your Strahd initiative, it's probably something you just want to not do. And the best way to not do that is to just not do it.
Especially in Castle Ravenloft.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next up, Strahd summons the angry spirit of one who has died in the castle. The apparition appears next to a hostile creature that Strahd can see, makes an attack, and then disappears. And it's the statistics of a specter. And its attack is a life drain, plus 4 to hit, reach 5 feet. So basically, it's a flavorful way of saying on initial count 20, Strahd could cause the life drain attack, a plus 4 to hit, reach 5 feet, 3d6 necrotic damage, DC 10 con save, or its hit point maximum is reduced. So there's another way to do it. Equal to the damage take, so then.
More damage. Kinda neat. Makes sense.
Yep. And then, or finally, Strahd targets one medium or smaller creature that casts the shadow. The target's shadow must be visible to Strahd and within 30 feet of him. If the target fails a DC 17 charisma saving throw, its shadow detaches from it and becomes a shadow, the monster stat block shadow, in the sense, that obeys Strahd's commands, acting on initial count 20. Create a restoration spell or remove curse spell. Cast on the target restores its natural shadow. but only if its undead shadow has been destroyed. So basically, it's summoned a shadow in a really cool way.
Right. If you summon the shadow, though, and then you never, you just destroy it, and you don't do the greater restoration or remove curse, do you just not have a shadow anymore?
That's how I read it.
Does that matter? Is there, like, lore implications yep. there?
Would you trust someone who didn't have a shadow?
I wouldn't notice.
Would you sell them stuff at your store? Would you even let them in town? Nice sunny day, and you notice, oh, big long shadows of this group of adventurers walking in, but one's missing one.
I
would you be like, oh yeah, that's a normal person that I totally trust and is not a ghost or some kind of monster?
In the land of Barovia.
Man, I just...
No, I mean after leaving.
I just don't even pay attention to shadows that much, I guess. But
I think because they're always there. I think if somebody was randomly missing a shadow, you'd notice.
You're putting a lot of faith in me there. Either way, okay, I see how you can play it out role-playing wise, and yes, we can say people do notice. Whether or not I would is besides the point.
Right. So a really cool layer actions. I think each one has uses, and I like how they don't, you know, you could redo the same one twice in a row.
Yeah, and it gives Strahd almost time to kill in a way, like this final fight, wherever it happens, and it's probably going to be somewhere in his castle, is
absolutely,
really
yeah.
not going to be in like a single room. You know, you're going to have multiple phases to this boss fight. And if you want to hear about multi-phase boss fights, hey, there you go. There's a little plug. But you know, you're going to have multiple phases, and using these layer actions can be a good way to utilize that. You know, the first part of the phase, he summons a bunch of rats and the specter is used. And then the next phase, he steals everybody's shadow over the course of four rounds. And then once he gets everybody's shadow out, or as many as he can get out in that time, he goes to another room, and it's like following him until he gets almost cornered, feeling like there's no other tricks up his sleeve to do anything else but fight and have that final stand.
Right. And every time he runs away like that, he regens 20 health every 6 seconds.
So it is basically like a restart to the fight if you can't follow him, which would be pretty hard to be able to do.
Right. And that's where the artifacts come in. There's one that allows you to like lock down and stun a vampire, which is pretty much a necessity.
Yeah, here. I mean, for it to really have a chance of ending, I know that with the setup of the campaign, you don't need to get like all three artifacts, but that one sounds like it's probably necessary.
Right. And one last thing here, really, we're talking about the Heart of Sorrow. In the stat block, he has 144 health, but he kind of has 50 more because he has a connection to the Heart of Sorrow, which takes damage for him. And the Heart of Sorrow has 50 hit points. If all 50 of those are taken, it's destroyed. He could disconnect it himself to it. So if it's getting low and he knows that he's going to keep toying around a little bit and then flee, he could disconnect it so it stays up. And then it regens. I don't remember the specific rules. That's not important. But so he kind of has 194
yeah.
health, which is a big difference.
194 plus 20.
Regen. It is a thing you can go beat.
That's what I was going to say. And also, yeah, stuff. If in the castle... I know you could seek it out and destroy it.
Yeah, and all of these things are just like fun ways that can really change how you do this final fight. Because that's, you know, if the party does storm the castle and, you know, breaks in, they find out about this Heart of Sorrow, they know it, and they're going for that first, then it'll just be a very interesting, I don't know if chase scene is the right word, but just a romp through the castle for them to find the Heart of Sorrow, destroy it while Strahd is phasing in and out of the rooms, sending minions at them and doing whatever he can without hopefully at the start getting too involved to slow them down and get them to leave.
But yeah, that is the Strahd stat block layer actions. We kind of felt like throughout we talked about how to utilize all this stuff and why it works well is like bringing him back in a recurring villain.
Yeah. And
did you have more to talk on that or?
Maybe I've got some like just general points that I wrote down of like ways to things to keep in mind when trying to do villains like this. So like number one, when the party's weak, just toy with them at every opportunity, because arrogance is really key to a villain like this. Just mm-hmm. the ability to show that you have the upper hand at any situation you can is always good. Other stuff, and this one's probably more conversational, you don't always have to fight the villain directly. So Strahd in this case is going to show up a lot of times, going to be a fight, but you know, he can bring minions and just watch from a distance, or even just taunt the party when they're doing totally unrelated things. It doesn't always need to be this like direct fight that comes up.
Right. I just picture like they're off doing essentially side quest, some extra thing, fighting something completely unrelated to Strahd. And he just kind of shows up 100 yards away, just yelling insults at them.
And that actually was. And so shout out to Signe, one of my players in our current game and friend. But they ran Curse of Strahd and they basically did that for like any time that there was the party was doing something. And it doesn't have to be unrelated to Strahd. It can be very related to Strahd. And he can still just show up and be like, oh, you're making progress. Great for you. It's not enough. And that is something to
whiff.
Yes, how Signe did it is a much more serious thing. Yes. I was picturing how Will is talking.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Either way is great. And you can do both. You can do both throughout the entire campaign. There's plenty of time for Strahd to change up his tactics to have fun with it. Because this honestly is for his enjoyment.
Right.
Your party's trying to take a long rest, get a nice sleep, and he's just sitting, you know, right outside the window, loudly eating chips. These are really good. Would you like
one? Oh, you probably wouldn't like blood flavored. Never mind. Other thing was, don't be afraid of an easy fight. And this is something that, I mean, Curse of Strahd, I think we've talked about it for a good amount, but always have that like ability for the villain to come back, and that could be them teleporting out. It could be them, you know, turning into mist and going away. But if that easy fight happens, I don't think that's like the end of the world. It's just a matter of them being prepared next time. And we talked about that a little bit with the paladin aspect. It's like, yeah, great. They steamrolled him this time. It's just this time.
This is one thing I'll say. This is kind of, we are talking about some generic concepts. That one is a little bit harder to transpose onto your non-vampiric bosses.
It's important.
And I think that's why Strahd's
right.
So cool.
I guess when we're talking about the recurring villain theme, though, it is so important to have that in mind, and it's what allows it to be a recurring villain. Because in any other situation, if you all had the big bad and you had the upper hand on them, you're chasing them down, you're stopping the fight, you're putting an end to it right there. So you need some reason why it's not possible to do that, be it they die and their body is merely a vessel, or they are astral projecting here and having the fight. I mean, whatever you want to come up with as that reason. Heck, you could do in their dreams they're having this fight instead of in reality. I mean, it really depends on what your villain is, but it's just integral to the recurring villain.
Dream fight.
What, a dream fight?
Yeah, that'd be a cool sequence. The party goes in a long rest as a villain using magic, invades their dreams. Like, there's already precedence for that. There's the nightmare spell. And just kind of, you know, make it a little beefier and give it a connected thing and toys with them in there.
I feel like Will's thinking of some silly connection now. I can see the gears turning.
Isn't that like, I think that doesn't work on elves.
Oh, because they don't dream. They don't sleep. It doesn't matter.
There's a quest, and I can't remember. You go to the, like, Lichland, and like the plot is like it's integral that they sleep, and they had to do something. You're like, if you're an elf, ignore that part. I can't remember what it was for.
That's all right. Then this one we did talk about a little bit as well throughout the course of this, though, but just like having Strahd offer deals, or again, your villain offer deals, they don't always need to show up for a fight. The idea is that they are enjoying the party struggle in some capacity. So be it struggling physically, struggling morally, or struggling, I don't know, something other some other example, a third example, then that to me is the villain is achieving their own goals, which is getting enjoyment out of batting the party around.
Right. Yeah, and just overall, a reason for the villain to keep interacting with the party.
Yeah.
And that seems obvious, but definitely like plan out beforehand. Strat is definitely one that can be used for a lot of different villain archetypes, arrogance and boredom. Yeah. But there's other reasons you can. Some sort of necessity.
You have an example? Go for it.
Just kind of thinking off the top of my head, maybe the villain has some sort of aura around it where they learn about people when they're in the aura. And so they're like kind of like learning more and more about the party and their memories and their skills and abilities. And so this is a reason to be around them and stall around them and keep showing back up. And also to do it more frequently because relearning what they've done. And at some point, maybe the party finally learns about this. And so this villain keeps trying to show back up to, you know, what seems like toying with them, but to like learn about what they've been up to in the past, you know, week or whatever. And the party needed to keep them at a distance. Hit my microphone there. I'm sorry if that was loud.
No, I like that. Cause then you just get into that whole, that idea of the parties working against the villain, but the villain is figuring out all of those plans and using this interaction to then learn about them and counter those plans as well. The other one I was thinking of, I feel like this is it's been used in some form of media, but the party unknowingly is part of a bigger plan, be it a prophecy or something that the villain needs to come to fruition. And so they need them to get to a certain point of success where they then are supposed to take them down. Little plot armory, but who cares? I mean, this is talking about a specific villain. When you've got a specific villain, there's going to be some plot armor involved.
Right. Or maybe even make it accidental. I mean, it's the villain, it's the antagonist of the campaign, but maybe they are not this great, ever-present, overarching villain like Strat is. And they just keep ending up in these same areas at odds with one another.
Funny meeting you here. Fight to the death? Fight to the death.
Gary Oak.
Yeah. The Gary Oak problem. That gets more into the rivalry aspect, which is, I guess, probably its own conversation.
Sure.
But either way, say, I think...
I like that.
Go ahead.
The fantasy idea, though, is like, you've got your quest board, right? So it's like, hey, kill 50 rats in the forest. And then you have, you know, your counter quest is like, pays the exact same. It's like, prevent someone from killing 50 rats in the forest. And so the nega party follows your party doing the quest they didn't take.
That's so annoying, but I... I've used that just not in such a meta way before. Yeah. Cause there is the time where you all had like a rival party and they'd very much show up and have the opposite goal as you, or at some point a counter to your goal. So it's not that I dislike the idea. It's that how you described it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Will. Yeah. But either way, that's all I've got for villains, for recurring villains, at least.
Yeah, another thing is how to... Most likely, you're probably going to have some reason why this villain can't just be killed. And then, yes. So it definitely makes you come up with a reason of how they can be killed and how you want that handled. How cathartic of an ending do you want the party to be able to achieve? With Strahd, it's a rough one, as written. So... Yeah, as we talked about, if he drops to zero, he just kind of regenerates. He can be killed in his coffin if you hunt him down there, or stop him from going to misform, like killing him well in water, which is, I think, would be a tough thing to set up. But yeah, as you get higher level, you might be able to manage it. And so if that happens, they do reach the goal of being able to escape Barovia, like the clouds of the mist go away and they can leave. But Strahd actually comes back. As written, it is impossible to kill Strahd. And I could see that being like a just such a tough pill to swallow, such like a downer note to end it on. It's like, sure, all right, the party got away. And maybe they won't care anymore because like they got out of Barovia. And that's that. But Barovia just comes right back under the thumb of Strahd. It's just an eternal loop. no matter what happens, that like that ancient darkness that he made the pact with will always revive him and always trap Barovia in this dark realm.
Yeah. And I guess I'll definitely agree that it's such a downer ending. And I guess I'll ask the question of, is it necessary? Is it a necessary downer ending? Or can you just say you did things in the specific order and you permanently killed Strahd, Barovia's free. Congratulations. This campaign doesn't matter anymore. We finished it.
Yeah.
It's such an odd thing to add. Like, I guess I kind of like that it's like, oh, dark and spooky, but it's months later. Your party's moved on
right.
with their lives.
Yeah, I know.
But then you're like, oh, but by the way, you actually didn't do anything. Why would you?
Right.
In a sense, it's to make it worse because it goes on to explain that the people of Barovia realize they're free. There are some without souls. I'm not sure exactly the metaphysics around the reason of that. If they try and leave, they just die. Like nothing happens to them. They just disappear. And then there's others who realize it's like, well, they have nowhere to go. They've been here for centuries. Kind of stuck in this loop. And so they said, okay, well, Strahd's gone. We're going to stay and now actually make this our home. And they get just enough time to get used to the sunshine and the ever looming threats removed in the hopefulness of a new life. And then they wake up one day and the clouds are back and the fog's there and Strahd's back.
Gothicore.
Yes,
baby.
It's very Gothicore. That's why it's there. And so if your party's like super, super into that and like really loving that vibe and the darkness and the despair of it, because we played maybe 3/4 of this campaign years and years ago when it first came out. So I don't remember too many specifics of like the non-Strahd related stuff. But if I recall, a lot of the things you interact with were kind of hopeless. There was not like a good outcome for much of anything. It was just kind of like two crappy options and which do you want to happen? And so that's really fitting for it. So it just depends who your party is, who you are, and if you want to end it that way.
Yeah.
If you do end it that way, I think it could be really cool pivot into a high level campaign, taking them from 10 to 20. This would have to be homebrewed, obviously, of going after that ancient darkness that he made the pact with that causes this to keep happening. And then that's the next step. 1 through 10 is dealing with Strahd and Barovia and finally defeating him, getting out and realizing like, okay, we're out, but all those people are still stuck. And
almost like a
misery.
Mirror to Out of the Abyss, where it's like the first part of Out of the Abyss is like getting out of the abyss. And then it's like, all right, we got to go back to the abyss a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah. But I think that could be a cool kind of pivot on there, like especially if people really attach to the characters. And 10 is, I know a lot of campaigns end there. That's like half the game not touched. So keep it going.
Yeah, no, that could be really interesting. I know it wouldn't be for me. Not, well, that's not true. That what you set up would be for me. Sorry, the standard ending that is set up would not be for me. And I would want at least a little ray of sunshine at the end. Because for me, the
there was a very small ray of sunshine, and then the clouds
for
came
me,
back.
The fun of Gothic horror
forever.
For me, the fun of Gothic horror is getting out of that Gothic horror and like putting an end to it. But that's fine.
And with the enhanced extra campaign, like going to level 20, there's other dark realms. It's like, I don't know too much about it, but I know that's just, there's definitely kind of lore drops about this ancient darkness has other dark realms like Barovia. And so you find your way into other ones and see what those are about. And you could have a lot of fun with it. There's a lot of cool, I think, creative things you could do there.
Yeah.
Obviously it'd be a lot of work compared to just buying a book and running it, but what did you say, Will?
We talked briefly about Shadowfell, though, like many, many episodes ago, because we were talking about it's like the Negaverse, essentially, and it has some really crazy, scary monsters. Remember that like tall, huge night monster?
The Nightwalker.
Like 8 years old? That's from Shadowfell, and that's where his powers were from. So that's like, oh, why should we go to Shadowfell? It's the worst place ever. It's like, the thing that made this Barovia is probably down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was years ago. We talked about that monster. But yeah, if I remember, I think getting to the Shadowfell like results in like your soul being permanently trapped there. If you go through it, do this through normal means and like you die to get there. And so yeah, that's the whole thing to figure out. And yeah, tons of plot hooks. I think a lot of cool creative inspiration.
I like it. You going to run it for us?
Nope.
Okay.
Wait, do you want to run Curse of Strahd first? And then I'll take over and run this.
Ooh, that's like a neat little handoff. No, probably not, because we already played like 3/4 of Curse of Strahd, so it's going to be hard to play again or run it and get excited. I don't know.
Right.
Especially considering I read like the majority of the adventure to make sure I was brushed up for the adventure or the podcast. So, spoilers, I know everything in that book. You're going to have to remake the campaign.
And no clever segue today, but our sponsor for this episode is going to be The Crafty Gamer, providing high quality D&D themed candles, soaps, t-shirts, and more. The Crafty Gamer allows you to set the mood of your game with their candles, or, you know, just show off your neat D20 soaps to friends as they all just try to smell you and say, yes, you do smell like a barbarian. And you can save 10% off your order using the code MM10. So go ahead and check that out at thecraftygamer.com. Thank you, as always, to our patrons Ed G, Muddleweight, Brian H, Craig A, Isaac M, Luca L, Jeff W, Star Shinobi, Vincent M, Bob F, Joe P, Rick D, Sensible D20, Tyler S, Gray, Barons, Adam A, Rob K, and Gray. If you want to check out the Patreon, you can, where you can get early access to episodes, usually, as well as campaign notes, show notes, occasionally other things, but most importantly, just supporting the show as we can continue to spend money on like new webcams. See, my webcam's new. And giveaways. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, as always, thanks for watching.
Perfect.